I'll shoot.
Your boy did it again.
You're now listening to Bobby and Friends.
Bobby and Friends.
Bobby and Friends.
Well, so everybody, for today's episode, I have on a very special guest, someone whom I've got to know for the few years that I've been in college, because they are one of my best friends' mom. And so today we have Leslie, who will sort of have a whole lot of different various conversations about just the nursing and medical and healthcare system in this country, and her experience with it and the various decades that she's been involved sort of in this system. And so, Leslie, welcome to Bobby and Friends podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Bobby. And I just want to start by saying it's an honor to be on your show. As you know, I am a huge fan of Bobby and Friends, and I just would like your audience to know that during these very daunting times of the pandemic, climate change, democratic backsliding, listening to you talk to young people and hearing how brilliant and how engaged they are is probably one of the most hopeful things I've experienced. And, you know, when you're feeling really down about things, Bobby and Friends, you hear all these young people, you feel much better. So thank you for that.
I am flattered by that. And thank you. And it's been wonderful sort of having various conversations, even throughout the various years that we've known each other. And sort of with that, could we start with sort of where did you grow up? Like, where are you from? If we could start off with that.
I've been living in New Jersey pretty much my whole life. I was born in New Jersey. I briefly moved to New York State, but only for a few years, and then back to Jersey. So I am literally a Jersey girl through and through.
So I'm taking you like Jersey way more than New York then?
I really do. I love Jersey. Yeah. I love New York still.
Yeah.
I love New York. I love living near. I love the fact that my time in New Jersey has been very close to the New York metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. I'm from the northern part of New Jersey. And like right now, I literally live, you know, just 7 miles from New York City. And I love that. It's great to be in the right in the heat of the New York metropolitan area. Just love it.
And so what was it like growing up in northern Jersey?
It's kind of funny because where I grew up was some of the more affluent suburbs of New Jersey, where my family was from. And it was a little further out from New York City. And it was sort of a mixed bag. Schools are good. That was one of the main things that attracted my parents to live in New Jersey and why I wanted to stay here, because the education system here is really good. But living now, I live in Montclair, which is very much closer to New York City. And a lot of people who work in New York or people who lived in New York, we like to call it the sixth borough.
Yeah.
A lot of people that live in Montclair are from New York City. And it is fabulous. I love living here because I feel like I get to have some of that Jersey stuff, but I just am constantly around people from New York, and it's really diverse here, a real mix of cultures. We have tons of restaurants of all different cultures. It's definitely more diverse, more just culturally enriching here in Montclair because you're closer to New York and a lot of transplants from New York. So I love it. I could, I'd stay here forever right here.
It's so funny because anytime I speak to somebody from New Jersey or from New York, they swear it's the best place in the world and that that is a place where they will always want to live and be.
Yeah. I do love D.C. though.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
Really and, do. I'd say New York City and D.C. are my two favorite cities. I like Boston too, but I think those are my two favorite. Yeah.
Got it. So you're just a Northeast kind of person.
I'm a Northeast person. I wouldn't last 2 minutes in the South. No.
Oh, yeah. And so by training, you're trained as a cardiac ICU nurse and a school nurse as well. And with at least 2 decades of experience, or actually almost 3 decades.
I'm on the verge of 3 decades. Yeah,
I'll be
28 years this May. When you guys are graduating, I'll be 28 years for me.
Well, congrats on that. And so I wanted to know, sort of with you being in this profession, in this career, did you always dream of becoming a nurse?
No, actually, I didn't. I made the decision to go into nursing when my sister was in medical school, actually. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And my sister was in medical school, and I would listen to her. You know, she's working as an intern. I would listen to her story. Yeah. I was like, that sounds really interesting. And I decided to go back to school for nursing and get my degree. And I just always very interested in cardiac care. That was like the first thing I was really passionate about. My aunt, who was sort of like a second mom to me, had a very serious cardiac history. She had her first heart attack when she was 28. She had a lot of cardiac problems, and I just really got into cardiac medicine. I just thought it was really interesting, and that was the first place I went out of college, was to cardiac medicine. Yeah.
And could you explain to the listeners of sort of what a typical day in experience or job of a cardiac ICU nurse might look like?
I worked in cardiac surgery recovery, cardiac surgery ICU recovery. So the patients who had open heart surgery would come directly from the OR to us.
Okay.
So, that patient is probably like one of the sickest patients you will have in the hospital. It's like having a patient who's been involved with a trauma, right? Because they're completely still under anesthesia. They have to be paralyzed to have the operation. They come out on a ventilator. They come out with chest tubes. They come out with a nasogastro tube. They have, they are fully lined with what we call central lines. So it's pretty much like your sickest patient in the hospital is cardiac surgery ICU. And then we recover those patients. And just in the time that I worked there in the 19 years I was there, you know, our recovery used to be, oh, you're going to be in the ICU for 3 days. And by the time I left, some people were out of the ICU in 12 hours. That's how how much cardiac medicine and cardiac surgery medicine advanced in that 19 year period.
Right.
So it's a very high intensity adrenaline pumping of nursing. Yeah. we had things like, you know, you will literally have an open chest code possibly in your ICU room. If somebody goes down, they may have to open the chest up right in the room and do internal paddles on the actual heart. It's a very high stress environment, but I loved it. I really did. One of the things I will say about nursing and why it's such a good profession is that nobody should ever get burned out in nursing, because there's just so many different types of nursing you can do.
Yeah.
And after that many years, it was, you know, you just get to the point where you just can't anymore.
Right.
You know? And I wanted to do something completely different. I was in the most acute type of nursing, and I wanted to do something different. And I thought, like, school nursing, with going from adults that are literally every minute is life and death to school nursing with little kids, where, you know, mostly, I'm not saying you can't have a life and death situation, but every moment is not life and death.
Right.
And mostly you're dealing with everybody who's fine. You're not really dealing with mostly sick people. And your focus is more about educating. Your focus is more about, it's more of like prophylactically, you're trying to help people stay well. You're doing disease prevention, where in the ICU, a lot of it is you're responding to illness.
Right.
So, you know, they were just so different. And that's what I found, you know, really appealing about doing school nursing, doing something completely different.
Sort of, you're working in a hospital, and so you sort of got to see firsthand as to how the structural design of the healthcare system affects both the offering of health services and how such services are received by those who are in need of them. What was the biggest takeaway that you took from your time as an ICU nurse on how the current healthcare infrastructure offers services to those in need of medical care or treatment?
Oh, that's a great question. And I think that I probably would have even had more of a taste of this if I had worked in the ER, because obviously you see in the ER, you know, those people that don't have health insurance and they come to the ER for their basic care because they have nowhere else to go.
Right.
But we did see what we would see. And this is, you know, part of when I was newly in nursing, one of my first, you know, wading into activism, as you know me, my activism.
Yes. Yeah.
was because the amount of people that I saw that were not getting care. For instance, I had this always was one that just stuck with me. A young man he was about in his mid to late 30s. He had two small children. He had a really big heart attack. Ended up in our unit because, you know, normally we'd have surgery patients, but he ended up with us because there were no beds in CCU, and he was a construction worker, and he did not have any health insurance, go from job to job. And he had a pretty big heart attack and left him with, you know, his cardiac function really was hit hard. And there, he's leaving the hospital with all these prescriptions. I remember looking at all these meds he was on. And I remember thinking, like, it's just a matter of time before he's bankrupt. Like, there's no way without insurance. What is this man going to do? And there he was, like this typical, like, American family, his wife, his two little kids. And I could just know by talking to them, discharging them, they had no idea what they were in for. They really had no idea what they were going to be in for. And you find out later, they're going to get clinic resources, and, you know, and this story plays out again and again. And when you talk to ER nurses, you hear it all the time. And the other, just from a school nurse perspective, now that I work in a community that is mostly in a school with mostly economically disadvantaged students, the amount of school, you know, you get the school, you give the school nurse your absent note, right? Oh, I was absent. Please excuse the student because they were in my office. So many of our students come in with notes from the ER because that's their only place that they're receiving medical care. So the very first political campaign I ever worked on was for Barack Obama. And the reason why I was passionate about Obama, one of the main reasons, was because I felt like he was the only one that I felt like was going to do something about healthcare in this country. And Obamacare has helped, but it certainly has not gone far enough. Community where I'm a school nurse right now, you definitely see the disparity. And you see kids, you know, I don't think any American child should not be able to access a doctor. They should not have to go to an ER if they twist their ankle, they shouldn't have to go straight to an ER because they have nobody else they can see first.
Right.
You know, or any type of, or if they're sick with they're coughing, they should be able to access primary care before they have to go to an ER. And, you know, unfortunately, even though Obamacare has helped a lot, it still has not fixed the problems with access to care. And I've seen it for 28 years in the acute setting, right down to being
right. Because it's also not about just caring something, but preventing sort of people getting sick. And I think in this country, we don't do that as well, especially in the preventing part.
Yes. And I think, like, one of the things that I talk about a lot when I discuss school nursing, especially in the environment that I'm in right now, like, sometimes I am the only healthcare provider that these kids see. I'm in. I think during this pandemic and what we're seeing happening in nursing and school nursing, it's really, if we get any more short staff, these kids, even they lose another line of defense to, like, help them and to provide preventative services and offer education and what have you. And the more short staffed these schools are and these places are, you know, the worse it is, because it's just another line of defense that they don't have. And nurses should be educating more than they are, which I can get to later if you want to talk a little more about that. But one of the things that's been happening in New Jersey for a long time is that nurses used to teach health. In fact, I got a school nurse certification and with an instructional where I can teach. And that doesn't really happen anymore. Mostly it's given to the gym teachers. And I think, like, some of the problems we're having with the pandemic, I think, is partially because we don't have nurses teaching health. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why nurses aren't teaching health is they're just too short-staffed. There's just too much for us to do in the nurse's office and all our responsibilities there for us to leave the office and be out teaching health in a classroom. There isn't anybody to cover us. So I think that has been, I would argue that has been very, very, some of the lack of education that we're seeing about communicable diseases, about vaccines, about these things. Part of it is because we don't have enough nurses in the classroom teaching. I really believe that. I think one of the things, you know, not to go off on a tangent, but as a contact tracer, which this is, I did a ton of contact tracing for the pandemic, I'm quite surprised by the amount of people that don't, even these people with college education, such as contact tracing, who don't understand basic communicable disease spread and how it works. just by the conversation I have with them. And I think that kind of motivated me to go back to school for my master's in public health.
Yeah.
We have a lot of deficiencies in public health in this country, and the knowledge that the regular Joe on the street knows about public health. When people are telling you they have no idea how they got COVID, they're COVID positive, they say, I don't go out of the house. I wear a mask all the time. I don't know how I could possibly have this, but here I am with COVID. And then you find out in the next sentence, two sentences, that their 5 and 3-year-old are in daycare all day. But they don't understand. Yeah, well, that's how you got COVID. Like that.
Little Johnny and little Susie gave you that.
Their kids are in daycare all day, you know? And, yep. And like, I can't tell you the amount of times that I had conversations like that. You know, I had a woman who kept her child on hybrid learning. She kept him home. She said, I'm not going to send him to school 2 days. I'm going to do virtual because I want to protect him. He had a chronic condition, and she was worried about his health. It makes sense. And then he ended up getting COVID, and I said, oh, my God, what happened? Blah, blah, blah. It turned out he was working. So he wasn't going to school. Well, the school wasn't safe, but he was working, and he got COVID. Yep. So, there's that public education piece of public health that I feel is so desperately lacking. We need more public health in this country and more nurses teaching, not just in the schools, but the community at large. Mm. I really, really feel that way. It's really important.
Wow. Well, I want to take us back a little bit because sort of earlier you sort of talked about the transition from sort of working in a hospital as an ICU nurse into sort of transitioning into being a school nurse. And I'm wondering sort of with the past year and a half, sort of on March 16th of 2020 in Jersey, two people had lost their lives due to COVID. And Governor Phil Murphy basically ordered for all public private schools in New Jersey, including preschools, colleges, to close in 2 days. When you heard about this, sort of what ran through your mind as a school nurse of like, what's going on and what is this? What kind of rent are you
like from the beginning? What I was thinking
from the beginning, like when you heard that announcement from the governor of like we're closing schools.
I have to be honest with you. I was following this story when it was going on in the Pacific Northwest,
and there were
potential cases of COVID,
uh-huh.
And I was like, oh my God, hair on. And the reason why I was saying that, even though people were saying, we don't know anything yet, was because what I did know was that this particular virus had not been in touch with humans before. So we did not know how we were going to react to it. That was the main thing that scared me. Okay. I was like, we don't know anything about this virus. We know nothing. We don't know anything, how we're going to do, how bad it's going to be, how transmissible it's going to be, how severe the disease is going to be. I immediately, being somebody who has a chronic condition and having a daughter who has asthma, I said, we have to start washing our hands. Don't dare not wash your hand. Like, yeah. I was saying that in January. Okay. I was telling my daughter, wash your hands. Here's your hand sanitizer. Don't leave your class without hand sanitizing. I was washing my hands. The directive that we were getting inside nursing, in school nursing at that time, was that don't panic. Don't tell your families like not to panic. Don't let them panic. Say no panicking. We're watching this. It's okay. You need to tell everybody we need to treat it like the flu. Everybody needs to start washing your hands, doing good hand hygiene, and thinking of the flu, how we behave in flu season. And I was like, okay, that's good advice. And I mean, I think the hindsight of that is more damaging when we look back, right? Because at the time, what it made me realize, because we were getting these directives from, it was coming from the New Jersey Department of Health down the chain to the county health departments and then the local health departments. And why it's so distressing after the fact was that we know that people up higher did know more. They did know that this was airborne or behaved like an airborne illness. So that is very distressing. But I would say that we know that in New Jersey, they didn't know any further. That's why they were giving us the directive. They were getting the directives from the federal government that were telling them this. We now know that the federal government knew that there was, it was potentially an airborne illness.
Right.
I think that Governor Murphy, I was absolutely not at all surprised. I know there were most people were very shocked that we closed down so fast. We live in the densest state in the country. We live where I am in one of the densest areas in the nation, like the New York City area. I mean, so locking down to me seemed like the absolutely prudent, correct thing to do.
Right.
In fact, I could argue they could have done it 2 weeks earlier.
You know? I'm sure a lot of people could make that point.
Right. In right. Hindsight, so I mean, it was absolutely the prudent and responsible thing to do. And I always thought so. I never thought that it was wrong. I thought we could have done it even earlier. Although at the time, you're just, you know, I wasn't sure. I didn't know for sure. I just knew that a virus was coming at us that we didn't know anything about. And that to me was enough that we should just shut down till we learn something. Mm-hmm. That's the way I was seeing it. Right. They're telling us it's not here yet, but why don't we just shut down and figure out what's going on? That's what, right. That's what, how I felt about it. I think that the more troubling part to this pandemic story for me, even more troubling than people in the federal government who knew more, has been the politicization of a deadly virus.
Yeah.
Because I think what's happened since that time is in some ways more dangerous than what happened at that time.
And you're talking about sort of all these various things that were taking place at that time. And how did even the politicking of this virus and the let's not even get to the vaccine part, but sort of the virus affect your job as a school nurse teacher? Because now you're having to service parents virtually, remote, so you can't even see them in right. person, as yep. well as kids. How did sort of the atmosphere of sort of the understanding about this virus, the various information that was coming out from various channels or mediums, how did that affect your effectiveness as a school nurse teacher to actually do your job properly?
I think that it really is, was very reliant on who was receiving the information. If that makes okay. sense. So so we went into what we really turned into contact tracers for the most part. I mean, we were still dealing with some typical issues where somebody has a medical issue and they want to talk to the school nurse and get advice or something like that. We were still having yeah. those things, or we still had, you know, questions regarding, you know, this, there was a doctor's note sent and we can't read it. Can you call the doctor's office and find out what the date was? Like, we're still dealing with some of those typical mundane kind of daily stuff.
Yeah.
But we basically turned into contact tracers. And it was basically like just tracing people and teaching. It was like nonstop teaching and education about, you know, what it means to quarantine, what isolation is versus quarantine, what a close contact is, whether, I mean, you know, you have to understand too, it was the first time that I felt like that really scared that I didn't want to make a mistake, because if I make a mistake, the kids in my school, they live with their grandparents. They mm-hmm. live in a small place with their grandparents. Their grandparents don't live a mile away. Right. So I got to be really careful and talk really clearly and make sure that everyone understands that, like, you have to isolate in your bedroom with your own bathroom. You cannot go near your grandparents, you know? So it had this level of stress to it that I hadn't really felt for a long time since the cardiac surgery ICU, that if you're not clear and you don't make sure you get the information to them clearly and they understand it, that they could potentially hurt a family member.
And so what was the support mechanism like for you during that time to actually be able to do your job?
Well, I mean, I would say that, you know, we luckily in the district I work in, it's big enough that we have a nursing supervisor who okay. is always like somebody we can fall back on. Or if we have somebody who's, you know, for instance, if I have somebody who is saying, oh, well, I can't do that. I have to go to work. I don't have a choice. I'm like, you can't go to work. You're, it's not safe. I always can have the nurse go to the nursing supervisor, and then they could potentially talk to the Board of Health and try to like have several people try to convince that person. No, you can't go out. Your wife has COVID and you could potentially have it and you're going to spread it. So that type of support mechanism. And you know, you still have your principals and you can call, but I think what was really difficult is that we didn't know a lot of what was going on, and nobody understood exactly some of the mechanisms of the spread and super spreaders and people that were asymptomatic. And so all those questions are coming at you, and it is difficult to have to say, like, I'm not really sure. Like, the amount of times I would say to people, we're building the plane while it's in the air. Mm-hmm. You know, and to say to people, like, don't get frustrated. Like, well, how come last week it was blah, 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 and this week it's these rules? I'm like, because, like, things are changing as data is coming in. We're still seeing that frustration, you know, that people are very frustrated when the information changes and then they don't trust you and think you're lying. And like, no, we've got new data and new information, because this science is literally unfolding right in front of us while we're living it. So that was really challenging as a nurse, because you're mostly dealing with settled, you know, case study and stuff that's settled. You know what right. I mean? You're not dealing with stuff that you're like, well, today they're saying this, so tomorrow it might change. You're just not dealing with that. So that was particularly difficult. There was just a comment on some school nurse page, and they were talking about, you know, how they don't contact trace in Florida or whatever. And it's easier to be a school nurse. Yeah. But I said to the person, it was a New Jersey school nurse page, and I said, in New Jersey, you have the average is one school nurse to 500 students. In Florida, the average is one school nurse to 1,500 students.
Wow.
So, you know, there's very big disparity of school nursing and depending on the state you live in. Very, very lucky that I work in a state that is very pro-education. So we have very good staffing levels. Thank gosh. Yeah, I mean, really, I can give my students the care that other care want to. I can't imagine with my 3,000 students, like, according to that, there would only be two of us. I don't know how we would get through the day. We certainly would not be able to give the great level of care that we give. This pandemic has also really taken a very large toll on nurses. I don't know if you know, but nurses for like the last 10 years is the most respected profession in America. And, you know, now in this pandemic, nurses have taken a big hit. Nurses are getting hate, you know, speech. They're getting, nurses need protection to go out to their cars in the hospital. We've had belligerent family members when I'm sending kids home, and they're like, well, this is ridiculous that my kid, I'm like, I'm sorry, but any kid that has these two symptoms has to go home and get a test.
Right.
So we're seeing this, like, something we've never seen really in nursing before. We've always been very well respected, and we've always been had like really good relationships with our families and our patients. And we're now seeing this, like, this sort of like they don't trust us. They think we're, you know, part of the deep state or something. So, you know, yes, I'm sorry, but Jimmy has to go home because he's coughing up a lung in, you know, his biology class, and nobody wants him in there, you know, like, you know?
Jimmy, you better stop coughing. You better stop coughing.
So,
it's funny you say that, because we have that. I'll be in class here at Georgetown, and somebody is coughing like as if their lungs are about to pop out. And I'm like, why are you in here?
Well, you know, and that's how we feel in the school. Like, go home. Like, don't, you can't be here with that. Like, you just can't. It's just not safe right now, you know? And, you know, and I get it. The parents in my district, like, most of these kids have, not only do they have parents that are working, you know, two full-time working parents, some of them have two and three jobs, you know? Mm-hmm. So I completely understand their frustration, but we have to look out for the whole. We've got to protect everybody. And until we, you know, when, like, right now, my school, that, you know, still there, until our vaccination levels are up higher, this is just going to keep going on and on and on. And, you know, so I think that's the other thing that's also driving, I think that's driving a school nursing shortage when normally you don't see that in school nursing. You normally see that in the hospital because it's always that really high stress environment in the hospital. It's always like a go, go, high stress. And people are just like, I can't do it anymore. And they usually, you know, go out to pasture in the school nursing because it's stressful, you know, you take a cut in pay, but the hours are better and the level of care you can give is better. But, you know, with this pandemic, it's really, really stressful being a school nurse. And we really have a lot going on for school nursing right now. And
as soon as we were kind of ending our conversation, I wanted to know what has been the most rewarding part about being a nurse and all the years that you've been in this profession? What's been the most rewarding part of it?
Wow. There's nothing there's nothing that will ever be more rewarding than like saving a life, like literally having the experience of like defibrillating a patient or doing CPR and bringing a person back. There's not anything that will ever be better than that. I am so like, I worked in an area of medicine that was really stressful, but the amount of times I was able to be involved in a code situation where we were able to save the patient was numerous times. And there's nothing that ever beats that. Like, although like after you go through that, you don't sleep for a few days because your adrenaline is so high that you're like, oh great, I'm not going to sleep for 3 days now. But there's just nothing, there's something about that that is just, you know, just knocks your socks off. It really does. It that's why like that kind of nursing is kind of a drug. It's addicting. Cause when once you have that experience, you're like, wow, that was, you know, it's just a great thing. And I mean, and then of course there's always the, you know, the cliche, like, you know, like, oh, people look up to you and respect you. And that's great and nice and everything. But, you know, that moment where you can give somebody a second chance, there's just nothing that's the best feeling you'll ever have is giving somebody a second chance. I always like to tell, like, I don't know if you remember the show ER that was so popular, and I would get so annoyed because they bring the patient into the ER and they're like, okay, we have to move the patient from the gurney onto the bed or whatever, and all the doctors come in, and in real life that's when all the doctors leave. In real life, when you're moving the patients around, all the nurses do it. The doctors are like, oh, I don't move patients, I don't do that. So it's just hilarious. Like, stuff like that makes me crazy. Like, doctors do not move patients. Nurses move patients, okay? And also, like, the fact that the nurse says she's in the ER and she says, oh, what is this medicine? I don't know what it does. Like, every ER nurse, every ICU nurse knows every medicine, what they do.
You would get kicked out if you said
that. Yeah, you can't work in the ER. If you say to your bed, oh, what is this medication? How does this work? They'll be like, go work somewhere else, lady. You don't belong there.
Oh my God. And sort of, I wanted to, of course, you're a New Jersey person and you're from there, grew up there. So, and you know, every single time Eileen goes back home, I'm like, I want some New Jersey bagels because New Yorkers and New Jersey people from New Jersey always talk about their bagels and how they have the best bagels in the world. So I do have to ask, who has the best bagels between New York and New Jersey?
New Jersey.
Okay. You know, Eileen might be disappointed that you took a pause to answer that one.
Yeah, I would say New Jersey. But in defense of New York, most of the time I do eat most of my bagels in New Jersey because it is a morning food. So I'm rarely in New York that early. But I would say New Jersey. Pizza, on the other hand, is a tie.
Okay.
Wow. But the thing about pizza is that you just have to, sometimes it's some pizza place in New York you never saw before in your life, some little hole in the wall, and you're like, all right, I'm starving, I just got to get this slice of pizza. And you're like, are you kidding? It's like ridiculous. You're like, some little hole in the wall place that I never saw before. Right. Like, you can't get, it's almost impossible to get a bad slice of pizza in New York City, where you can get a bad slice in New Jersey, but you almost can't find one in New York.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, but bagels, I'm going to give them to New Jersey. We have great bagel places and bagels here.
Now, what is the most annoying thing about people from New Jersey?
I think the most annoying, oh my God, the most annoying is that, oh my God, this is so typical of me to say. The most annoying thing about the people of New Jersey is that they don't understand the politics of the state at all. And that they think because that, oh, the state is blue and we're all Democrats. It's just the Northern Democrats and the Southern Democrats are two very different animals, and they don't really understand that. And it gets frustrating. It's very frustrating because they're like, what's wrong with our governor that he's fighting with the Senate president? It's like, well, our governor is from the Northern Democrats and our Senate president is from the Southern Democrats. So they have a lot. It's almost like being in two separate parties sometimes.
Yeah.
And when people don't understand that dynamic, it frustrates me. Because, of course, I'm generally frustrated when people are not engaged in their, you know, in their local communities and their statewide politics, because it's really important stuff. And they should know what's going on.
And so what is the best thing about people from New Jersey then?
Oh, my God. It's the fact that people from New Jersey will always just tell you what's on their mind.
Yeah.
So obvious. And the other thing I love, my very favorite thing about living in New York and New Jersey, is probably one of the things that everyone hates. It's like, it moves fast, man.
It does move like, extremely fast.
Yeah. I don't ever go anywhere to get something to eat where I'm frustrated because it's not fast enough. It's like, you go, you go in and get a slice of pizza, you get one in 1 minute. Like,
right.
It moves fast, and we move fast, and we... And I like that about us. We're really hardworking, and we're moving and shaking, and we're just, we got stuff to do, and we got things to do. And I like it. I like that.
Yeah.
Well,
there you have it, folks. New Jersey, the best state in the country.
With the best governor.
Hey, I'm not saying nothing. I don't want the New Jersey people. It's like New York. You cannot say anything positive about the New York politician, because all the New Yorkers will have something negative to say about them. So I'm just like, hey, we don't like them. True.
New York governors are a little tough. New York
governors.
Believe me, we've had some governor issues in the past, but this particular governor we have right now, I am a big fan of. So.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I'm not sure Governor Murphy's going to hear this, but he does. Apparently, you do have a big fan of Bobby and Friends. But really, you know, thank you so much for sort of coming on and discussing with us about sort of your nursing career and your experience in the medical and healthcare field and sort of all the things that you've seen and an amazing job that you, as well as all the other school nurses, are doing within schools. You know, I obviously have fun memories of going to the school nurse office. Now, granted, sometimes I would go there to lie about being
sick so I can
stay home.
Yeah. I hope you weren't one of those frequent flyers.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
My throat. Kids, like, it's algebra right now, right? That's why it's eighth period and you're in algebra. I get it. Okay.
But no, you all do an amazing job and definitely almost like a lifeline of sort of the health of a school and whatnot. And so thank you for that work. And thank you for having been an amazing individual for me to know. And just what a wonderful mother you are as well.
Yeah.
Eileen, I'm going to win some bagel points on that one.
I'm going to go shopping for some blueberry bagels.
No, yeah. But thank you so much. And thank you for coming on to Bobby and Friends.
Okay. Thank you, Bobby.